a job interview question I can answer.
Coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. I am Rob Coulter. Finally remembered to hit the record button when we've come back from a break. That is a massive win on my end. Joined by a returning guest on this one, General Manager of Pathways, Dom Lanossia. Welcome back, Dom.
Thank you, Rob. Great to be here.
Been a little while since we've had you on. And a debut podcaster, the General Manager of People and Culture, Catherine Mercer. Welcome, Catherine.
Thanks, Rob. Happy to be here.
Excellent. So this will be... This is a fun time of year, obviously, because everyone is advertising for positions, applying for positions. Like, this is chaos this time of year. I've had more coffees with people that want to talk about their coaching pathway in the last 2 weeks than I have in my entire life, it feels like. And everyone's going to go through the same sort of thing. Obviously, state team positions will be open. Yep. I think by the time this podcast comes out, which is next week, which is... Yeah, okay, they'll be roughly out. I'm trying to foresee some stuff into the future. I'm no good at it. Yeah, no good at that, as it turns out. But... Even at the VJBL level, Big V, NBL 1 level, everyone's applying for jobs around the place. And it is one of those things that I think a lot of people get really nervous about job interviews and what that potentially looks like. And I get it. Like, I completely get it. Like, it's one of those things that a lot of people don't necessarily go through often and regularly enough that they can feel confident with it. So we're just going to discuss some advice, some things that might hit with people, some things that they thought, I've never thought of that before, or just some additional educational things. We're not trying to hack the system or anything like that. Like, there's going to be a whole bunch of questions we throw out there that it's like, you may not get this question in an interview, and that's fine. But just to be aware of, I think, beforehand. So, I mean, we'll start with you, Catherine, because you do this for a living.
Yes.
Obviously, like, you interview people all the time. Is there... Like, what do you look for, I suppose, when you're interviewing people? Is there anything that jumps across? Are you looking at history? Is it how they present? Like, how do you weigh up, like, a resume versus how someone would present?
Yeah, I think we stick to the adage that I think applies to sports teams as well, is, like, we can't pass on good people. So, ultimately, the primary thing we're looking for is cultural fit. Particularly for roles here at BV, but that should apply to every organisation. So many of the skills or experience that's required is coachable or attainable, but cultural fit's really a priority for us. So we're looking for good people first and foremost. And that comes across through the interview process as people who are honest about their skills and experience that they have or they don't have, and that authenticity that they bring to, it should feel like a conversation.
Yep. And it's difficult, I suppose, because everyone walks into those wanting to put their best foot forward, but they're nervous. Mm. Like, as they walk in there, and, I mean, is anyone ever at their best self when they're nervous?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, put it in the basketball context, Dom, obviously you get a lot of resumes that come through and kind of like this time of year, everyone's your best mate and it's like, hey, you know, I wouldn't mind this job over here. What can this look like? How do you put that in context as well, where you also have the lens of, well, when you're interviewing for, say, state team positions, winning plays a part in that as well.
Yeah, for sure. I think Catherine's point about getting the right people on the bus is more important than getting them on the right seat straight away, like get the right person in and then be able to figure out as a group what really works. From a coaching, I guess, coaching position lens, really we're looking for, do you have a tactical command? Can you demonstrate a level of expertise in some subject matter? I'm sure this speaks to other roles that we have as well. Like, what's your level of expertise look like in that space? So tactical, technical understanding. Can you demonstrate a level of relationship building? I'm not sure if we'll touch on this later, Rob, but one of my least favourite answers in any interview is like, you know, what are you great at? Oh, I'm great at building relationships. It's like, yes. Congratulations, you're a human and you're a coach, and I think that's really important.
I don't know that I'd answer that well, to be honest. Like, my circle is small.
I guess but my answer would, my desire always with that question is like, great, I'm really stoked that you are great at building relationships, but like, how do you quantify that? Like, what evidence can you bring to substantiate the fact that relationships are something you're really good at building? You know, do you have survey data that you've done at an entry point and an exit point of a season that you've gone through? Do you have anecdotal reflection that you can validate in some way, shape or form? Do you have specific like story time moments that you can bring up and like leverage on and to demonstrate what that looks like? So I think that speaks to Catherine's point about being honest.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, I mean, the technical term for what you're talking about there is competency-based interviewing, right? So don't just tell us what you're good at, but tell us how and why. What does that look like? Give an example. Mm. So think about those statements that you want to say that may indeed be true. You may be a great relationship builder, but how do you do that? And what does that look like? And what's the outcome of that? That's how your interviewer knows that you understand what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's something I think as coaches we probably don't get right. We're so used to just telling people what to do that we don't always think about, have I explained that well? Yeah. And it's something that actually as coaches we should be quite good at, because we have to go into the weeds sometimes. Like, hey, you know, outside foot, heel down, then toes down, then opposite foot, like those sorts of things. We can unpack that, but we can be a bit flippant with it. Mm. And I mean, very rarely would anyone come out of an interview with the, I just nailed that and I don't think I could answer anything better. Like, yep. There's always something as you go out of it. So, like, Don, how would you prepare for an interview in the first instance to make sure that you are hitting on the right things that you want to hit on in that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the, I guess, going through the process to be in the position that I'm in now is, like, relatively recent. So it's probably a decent, like, point to kind of refer back to. But, well, A, you have to prepare. Yep. So don't, I wouldn't be planning on going into any interview and like flying by the seat of your pants kind of thing. Like having some level of preparation, whether that's in whatever way works for you, write some notes, bring them in, have them as a reference point for yourself. Maybe it's maybe they ask you for a presentation or something and you use that as your notes base to be able to sort of leverage from. So preparing in some way, shape or form is a good start before heading into anything. I would be going through the like values and the ideas about what any organization or group is putting out there. And that's a pretty safe bet that that would be a question, or the nature of questions will start to emerge from that. Would you agree with that, Catherine?
Yeah, absolutely. The mission and the values is where I'd start with the organization. What are they all about? How can your skills and experience contribute to that? And how do you as a person align with the values of that organisation? These are the most important things for them.
Awesome. And hopefully that's a process you've already gone through because you've applied for the job, because the values align with who you are and what you're interested in. And then there'd be a level of like, go back to the position description. What's the technical, tactical, skills-based competencies that they are seeking in that role, and how can I be prepared to answer questions about them? So if one of them is about building relationships, then what evidence do I have to be able to back that up? In a state team coaching job, one of them is likely to be about depth chart. So what's your awareness of the age group, for instance? So you would have that prepared coming into an interview process to be able to say, here's who I think the 30 athletes that might be on a depth chart are. Nobody's expecting you to be perfect with that, right? It's not about necessarily having the right, you know, I just did a visual cue for audio podcast, which is great, but in inverted commas, the right depth chart or the correct depth chart. It's not about that. It's about the preparation and thinking that you've brought to what that is and being able to unpack that. And then the last component, I think, would be having questions ready to ask the interviewers as well. You know, as Catherine said, it should be a conversation, or a great process is a conversation. So having the preparation and the confidence to be able to go back and say, yeah, what about this? Or how do you explore this? Or how would you do this based on what your context might be? I think is really important to sort of prepare for an interview as well.
Yeah. I mean, I'll just add to that. I think in terms of preparing your responses, so thinking about looking at the position description, thinking about the questions you're going to get asked and how your skills and experience align with that. The next step I go to is practice your answer by saying it out loud, because practice makes permanent, and that dispenses with some of the nerves sometimes. Talk about it over the dinner table. I'm going to say this. How does this sound? Do you think I nailed that point? Talk to your trusted advisors about it, because that, practice makes permanent. And then in terms of having questions, I think that's a really important point. This is a two-way street. You are vetting that organisation. And that role, is it a good fit for me as much as they're assessing you? So you want to make sure you've walked out of the room having all of the information, that you have to make an informed choice when you get that offer. Yeah, that's a place I want to be. Or actually, I didn't love their response to that question. I'm going to try over here instead.
Yep. So what's an example, I suppose, of a good question to ask, just so that you're not, like, I'll put it in the work context of, hey, so what's it pay? Like, that's one straight off the bat, like, that people are going to ask, obviously. Mm. But are there better questions than others, I suppose, in that space?
Yeah, I would probably avoid the what does it pay question. It's the first question that I ask. That's usually an amber flag for me.
And in a coaching role, it's like, well, you'll be paying us. Yeah. Like, it's going to cost you money to do this. Like,
how much can you afford to do this job? Yeah, absolutely. I would be asking questions around, what do you think success looks like in this role?
Yep.
That's a good question, because then you know going into it what's expected of you and whether you can meet those expectations. Yep. I like that question. What about you?
I think the success, like what a success look like, is a great question. One that we've fielded many times in our interview processes together, Catherine, over the last little while. In particular, for a coaching role, it is a question about the avenues for support. I think is another one. You know, you might be going to a new VGABL club, or you might be going for a state team job. And so if that's your first time doing that, like might be your first time going for a higher team, or it might be your first time going into an age group, or coaching a different gender or whatever it might be, is like, what is the plan of support that exists for that club to be able to help you as you manage that? Like, should you be successful in the position? How would I go about, or what support can I expect from whom as well? Is it a DOC? Is it a coaching coordinator? Is it a mentor? Is it a direct to the GM, is it a coach education manager, like, you know, a high performance coach, whatever it might be, who is the person that I can look to for support, and what is that support going to look like?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that goes into the preparation, I think. Like the more preparation you can do on either the organization, the business, whoever it might be in that sort of space that you can do, the better. Like, I know this will not paint me in a fantastic light. So was working at a prior organization where was applying for another job because my role was finishing up. So I knew that there was something coming up. One of the mates that I had at that business has said, hey, I'll write your application for you. I'm like, yeah, no worries. Like, you know, was fairly high up in that organization. I'm like, right away, like no problems at all. Got an interview based on the written application. Mm. Went into the actual, the face-to-face interview, and butchered it to the point where I couldn't even remember what the acronym of where I was applying for stood for. Like, it was diabolically bad. And like the guy that interviewed me is like, hey, you know, thanks, end of the interview, we'll wind up there. I'm like, yep, no worries. He's like, hey, can you just hang back for like 2 minutes? I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, no worries. Like, maybe he's going to offer me the job. And I'm like, no, that can't be it. Like, it's that definitely wasn't the case. He's like, did you write this? I'm like, look, I didn't. I'm like, the information in it is correct, but I didn't write this. My mate wrote it for me. He's like, yeah, nah, it tells you need to do more research before you walk into the room. Mm. He's like, we like you as a person. We think you would fit here, but we cannot give you the position based on you don't know enough about what we actually do in the first place to be there. And that clarity to start off with is like, you could have fixed all of this with your last couple of questions. Mm. Like, don't wait. Like, do your research before you walk into the room, not try and figure it out as you're going through it. And it's like, yeah, of course, 19-year-old me didn't realize that at the time. It's like, I probably should have worked out the acronym, like, straight off the bat. But it is that sort of stuff where you know when people walk in prepared.
Yeah.
Like, it comes across straight away that, okay, they've got this. The nerves are still there. There's a little bit of apprehension still, but they don't get to that point where it's – they're kind of on that fact-finding mission in the interview. They've already got that information.
Yep.
And so I think that real clear, concise clarity around it matters. And that's, I mean, that comes back to the position description. Do you know what you're applying for in the first place? Is this, say, in the coaching context, a head coaching role, an assistant coaching role, a development coach role? What are the difference between the three?
Mm.
Don't just go, oh, I'll apply for all of them because I'm happy to go anywhere. Well, that probably shows that you don't really know what you're about.
Yep.
In that. So there's got to be a level of self-awareness there, I think.
Yeah. Definitely. And I think it's absolutely, I would far rather hear from a candidate in an interview say, that's not something I've got experience of when posed with a question, but it's something I'm really keen to learn about. And I know I can get information from X, Y, and Z to help me build that capability, than fluff through an answer that's not entirely right.
Yep.
That's where that, like you say, self-awareness and authenticity and honesty comes into it.
Yeah. Well, it's also, do you work before the interview? Like, because I know there was a role I applied for, and again, we're going back like 18 years now. I rang them beforehand and said, hey, I just want to talk to you about this role. Got into the interview, and they're like, you're the only one that rang.
Yeah.
Mm. Like, oh, okay. Well, they're like, well, this is why you've got the interview. Like, you were the only one that had the foresight to ring up and say, what's this about? Can I find out more?
Yeah.
I don't think that's a bad thing to do.
It's absolutely not a bad thing to do. And I think if you want to give yourself the best chance of success, you want to go in armed with all of the information. So if you're reading the documents that you've been provided, and you feel like something's missing, then call up and ask the question. If you want some clarification about the role so you know you're going for the right thing rather than going for it and then pulling out later in the process, do that and save everyone a little bit of time and effort. Save yourself some time and effort. So I absolutely think it's a good thing. And additionally, if you feel like going into the process, you might need some adjustments because of any additional needs that you might have, that's a great time to be talking to the panel or the employer or the organisation about that as well.
Yep. Can I put a bit of an asterisk on the ring in advance or say questions in advance? Just to make sure that you're not asking questions that are of information that's available. So that's a real point of frustration is like, well, they haven't actually read a role description because they're asking who it reports to or what the direct reports might be. It's like, well, that's actually outlined in the top box at the very top of our role descriptors is who the reports are and who you report to. The inquisition or the inquiry is good as long as there's purpose behind it and as long as there's merit to it, and that merit is to find out more information for a potential interview or for a potential application
at that point. That makes a lot of sense. So how would you deal with, and you kind of half answered this already, Catherine, but I'll dive back into it. How do you deal with the question that just stumps you completely and you have no answer for it and you don't want to say, I've got no idea? Interview. Like, how do you actually convey that across to people?
I like it when people stop and think about their response first, because if you actually give it 10 seconds, you probably do have a bit of an answer or a way to articulate your understanding of the topic. So it's okay to say to your interviewer, just give me a second to think about that one. That's a really great question. I want to formulate my thoughts before I talk. That's a great response. And buy yourself a little bit of time. And then if you really genuinely don't know the answer, be honest about it. Because if that's the answer, if you fluff through that and it's a key point of the role, it's either not going to get you the opportunity or you'll get the opportunity and it will come out later in the process that I actually know nothing about that topic.
Take a really long drink of water.
Yeah.
It's a great one at that point in time. Maybe even purposely pour yourself another glass just to buy yourself that thinking time.
Hang the tension.
Make the tension build. I think reframing the question is a great way to go about that too. So I'm sorry, I don't have an answer for you directly on that question. Am I right in thinking that you're asking about this, this and this? Or I don't have a direct, example of me doing that, but can I give you an example from a previous job where I've managed a conflict or whatever the question might be about? Kind of make that segue, but ask that clarification question can be a really good thing. I think on the other end, preparing interview guides for questions, it's like all best intentions, right? Yeah. You write the question down, you read it to yourself, you chat with your panel members like, hey, that's a great question. And then you get in there and you're like, that is a terrible question. Yeah. So now I'm going to have to ask that in a different way. And sometimes that clarity or that part can be missed too. So I think interviewers appreciate or panels appreciate that opportunity to reframe as well, get the right answer.
Absolutely. We've sat in interviews together and having asked a question that looks like a good question, you can tell that it's not a good question when none of your candidates can answer it. That's not a candidate problem. That's an interview panel problem.
It's interesting that one because there are plenty of times too where I've had either myself or a candidate say, I don't know. Can I park that one for a little bit? We'll move on with the interview and I'll come back to it. Yep. And it's like, great answer. I'm really happy with that because it means you've actually put some thought into this in that sort of lens as well, which I really like. Mm. I'm curious on this one. This is a real dicey question, so I'm
so
conscious
I'm
of this.
Really appreciate that.
What are some of your biggest red flags when interviewing someone? Like, is there anything that jumps out straight away where it's like, absolutely not?
The first thing for mine is come in with a headline. So you come in and you're like, I am really good at this and not be able to deliver that. I reckon this might be, I might gun for a story time here, Rob.
Yeah,
I reckon
that's absolutely. All right.
Sensational.
Pressure's on, Catherine.
Yeah. Look, a number of our state team coach interviews that occurred last year, people would come in and say, I'm really good at film. I'm really good at demonstrating film and really good at using film as a tool without then using film to demonstrate the depth of capacity that they have. And it's it's not a red flag in terms of no, we don't employ that person, but it's a real important like call out. Speaks to the honesty that you spoke about before at the start, Cameron, but it also speaks to the preparation, right? Those people weren't being dishonest. They are really good at film, right? They are really good at delivering that. They just didn't have an example ready to go. And so you're like making sure that what you identify as your strengths, you can then actually demonstrate.
Yeah.
I think is a really important part. Before anything else is like, how are you appearing? How are you presenting yourself into that process? And that's not to say everybody needs to be like suit and tie. I'm not saying that. But is there a manner with which you hold yourself? Is there a manner with which you bring yourself to that interview room and to that process that demonstrates that you understand that this is a job that you would like or a position that you would like to do, that there's a level of respect for self and for the time of others that are putting in to be able to provide the platform of an interview. And again, then the nature with which you hold yourself. So it's not fake it till you make it. It's just an idea of like what demonstration of respect are you presenting to the people's time, your time, the other people's time, as you walk into that process with how you present yourself. They're probably my two biggest ones.
And piggybacking on the attire one, like that was one that I got taught real early by an inspector I used to work for. He's like, never be the worst dressed person in an interview.
Yeah.
He's like, if nothing else, if you walk in and you have better attire, and like anytime you interview for like VicPol, it's like, well, I know they're going to be in the blues.
Yeah.
Like,
it's,
I don't know that I can really top that. But, you know, it's one of those ones where it's like, I do need to come in dressed appropriately for this because, and his thing was, you just want to put the little bit of pressure back on the other side. It's like, I'm taking this more seriously than you're taking this. Yeah. And it's like, oh, it's a real deep psychological cut on that one. But that was kind of his thing. It's like, well, okay, that's fair.
Yep.
What is coaching attire? Like if you're in a coaching interview is obviously very different from a corporate interview. Like what would you expect, say, from a state team coach as an example?
Again, I think it depends on the person and their what is comfortable for them. Like, I think that's really important. But it's more I'm less about like – shirt, collar, suit, jacket, or like coaching polo, coaching top. I'm less about that than more than like, is it a positive interaction? Are you walking in and engaging in a positive way? Are you bringing a joy or a sense of opportunity to that interview process? Like, yeah, you can be nervous. That's fine. Just like turn those butterflies in the tummy into some positive energy, like firm handshakes, eye contact, positive notion and seeing the presentation as an opportunity to be able to be there. But also like taking that, if you were looking at yourself in the mirror, are you proud, like confident that you, that like disassociate from that person? If that person walked in and you met them for the first time, would you be saying, yeah, that's a person that is clearly going to be able to articulate who they are, what they're about, and how they're necessarily going to go about and do that? I think that's probably more about like what my frame that I was thinking about with the sort of presentation. But like, I'm never going to say no to a suit and tie jacket or whatever works. But it's more about, I think it's more about the presentation in terms of like the self that you bring to that moment. Is that fair,
Catherine? And I think that's in terms of how you dress, whilst there's no dress code as such, how you dress is part of your preparation, right?
Yep.
If you're putting on, you know, a freshly pressed shirt or some slacks or changing out of your basketball gear into something different, it's a mindset shift. And you're telling yourself, I'm walking into a different environment here. So it's as much about that prep, the internal messaging, as it is about the external messaging.
The other caveat I would add is like, what is the nature of what your interview process looks like? Because the interview process may be in a boardroom presenting. Mm. It may be a demonstration, right? So you may have a physical demonstration that you have to work through. And so if that's the case, if it's active, then you'd need to dress appropriately for that. Mm. And if the follow-up to that then is sitting in a room and having questions asked, then you'd be attired for the active component, right? That's an expectation. So, certainly have had like, when I was in schools, have teachers who come to do like demonstration lessons, and they would come in and like a classic one that I can remember is like a PE teacher came in to deliver a health lesson, and so that's a classroom based lesson. It's a lesson there where there's not necessarily a physical activity that's happening outside, and they came dressed in like active PE kit. Now I get it. You know, I understand it. You're a PE teacher. You're like in and out of the classroom. You know, the active notion of what it looks like. But we'd given a pretty like firm brief around what this looked like. And that to me was a bit like, okay, have they either misread the circumstance or is there a conscious choice that's gone on about this is how I'm going to present it? Does that align with where we're at that process? So
Interesting. So Catherine, same question, red flags. What are some of the ones that jump out to you straight away?
Lack of preparation.
Yep.
Simply not understanding what the rule is means you haven't read the most basic of details. That's a red flag for me. Gaps in the employment history that are unexplained is a red flag for me. It's okay to have gaps because you're saying, I went to Europe for a year or I went backpacking. Lovely, right? But if you can't explain the gaps, then that's something that we would want to dig into from a child safety and compliance perspective. And for me, and it's difficult because we live in Melbourne and the traffic's really bad, but lateness.
The fair one.
Yep,
totally.
It's all right to call and say, I'm stuck on the freeway. I'm so sorry. Yep. I'm running 10 minutes late, but plan to be there 10 minutes early in the first place.
Yep. Yeah. No, I really like that one. I'm, you know, my 2026 mission has been on tardiness. It's to the point where I'm annoyingly early for stuff now, as it turns out. But it's, but yeah, that is a very controllable thing. Mm. And in particular, if you are in a role where you might have to take an on-court session that starts at 5 o'clock and you're lobbying in there at 4:59, that's late.
Mm.
Like that's not what we're after. Mm. So this is a difficult one that I think a lot of coaches would struggle with, but I think people in general would struggle, whether it be employment or anything else. How do you – and I'll put the coaching lens on first and then we can backtrack from there. We tell coaches all the time, it's not about you as a coach. It's about your players. And it's, you know, can you set them up for success? What is the best, you know, way forward for them? It's not about you as a coach. How do you go about selling yourself in an interview without coming across as arrogant? Mm. And, you know, it's me in that sort of thing, when that's kind of the job.
Mm.
And then you, like, of how you get that across.
It's the point, right?
Yeah.
So you want to walk in not with a sales pitch, but an elevator pitch,
yep.
I think, is the first thing. That switches it from arrogance to productive for me. It's aligned to the conversation that you're having. I think it's okay to have really good examples of where you've had great achievements. They need to be your achievements, not piggybacking off the back of somebody else's achievements. I think we hear a little bit of that sometimes. Mm-hmm. What would you say?
I think anything that's grounded in examples transitions pretty quickly from like, I'm good at this, to here is evidence of the success that has happened, you know. So, and some, like, that doesn't necessarily mean like bring in photos of all your pennants or your medals or like whatever you've won. Like, I'm not talking about that, you know, but do you have the story of like Johnny or Jane that you took at the start of the season, this is where their capabilities were, here's the data that we worked at, here's where we got to by the end of the year. I'm really proud of the work that that athlete did, but I'm also proud of the work that I did to contribute to that athlete's success. Is very different to my coaching got Johnny or Jane from point A to point B.
Yeah.
It's grounded in evidence, it's athlete-centered in terms of the reflection, but it also is a positive reflection on the coaching and the way in which you've gone about it. You understand the role that you played in that because you're able to ground it in examples.
Yeah,
I think
the things that we're talking about so often are really solo pursuits, right?
Yeah,
this is a team sport. We have team efforts. We have team achievements. Everyone plays a role in it. Recognizing the role that you played in that team setting displays some humility without sounding like arrogance.
Definitely. Yeah. I think too, sorry, mate, is that
no.
Like the role that you're interviewing for is really important. So like, I would say that it's arrogance to walk into an interview to say, I can be an assistant coach because I'm a head coach, or I can be a head coach because I'm an assistant coach. Like, I think that's arrogance. There's a lack of discipline in understanding the essential differences of one seat further up the bench. And the nature of how that role challenges, I think, is really important. So an awareness that that in a coaching specific context, that because you're a head coach at a VJBL level doesn't mean that you can necessarily be a great assistant coach at a state team level. It's just, that's not necessarily what translates. What translates is the role and the work that happens as the head coach. Can that translate to the role and the work that happens as an assistant coach, or what's required of an assistant coach?
Yeah. And it is interesting. I mean, you touched on humility there as well, Catherine, which I think is a really good one. Like I love when someone in an interview says, look, this might be a gap.
Mm.
like for me, like this, I'm not brilliant at this, or I'm working on this, I'm working towards it. For mine, straight away, it's like green flag.
Yeah,
like that's fantastic. Self-awareness, great. Humility, great. Mm. Has identified an issue and is working towards something.
Growth mindset.
Brilliant.
Isn't that, that's terrific.
Straight away, it's like, okay, I'm attached to this now. Now I'm actually in this as well, because even if they're successful, it's like, well, now we have a plan to work towards out of this as well that we can do something with. Mm. It's not just I'm the right person for the job. And I've been fortunate that I've sat in interviews where someone wildly overqualified for the role has applied for the role. Mm. And even they have managed to come across as not arrogant, confident, with examples, but saying, look, here are some areas where I might fall over on this. Mm. You know, I'm used to working with professional athletes. I'm coming in to work with junior athletes. Yeah. That might take a little while for me to adjust to. And it's like, oh, okay, good. Mm. Like now I'm not searching for problems. I've had one presented to me, which I really like. Mm. It's it's just a really great thing for mine. So the other one that I would always recommend before the interview when we talk preparation, ask about the tech. Like if you are coming in and you have to give a presentation to someone and it might be film for argument's sake, okay, is it an HDMI? Do you need me to bring a cable? What is this going to look like? Because we've all seen it go sideways where it's just like, I can't get it to work. And you can see straight away, flustered. The person is just, everything that could possibly have gone wrong has gone wrong. They've put their whole identity and potentially a week's worth of work into this presentation, which now they can't do anything with.
Yeah.
So I'm always a big believer in be prepared for it to fail. Like ask, but be prepared for, okay, if it doesn't go well, what is plan B? And that might be if you have a slide deck, just print out the slide deck and be able to say, hey, I'll talk to this and go through it. But that's one straight away where I've just seen so many coaches get brought undone by an HDMI cable that's a little bit dicey.
Oh, definitely. I remember interviewing for a junior national team job. Yeah. I was definitely not qualified. I was definitely not like at the right level, but I also did not appropriately have the backup plan for the tech.
Yeah, right.
So when the laptop didn't work and the projector screen didn't work, I stood awkwardly next to the table and like, now I'm going to press like space bar to move my slide along. And I just remember the panel sitting there and they dutifully taking their notes and asking questions. I remember walking out of there being like, there is no way that I am being appointed to that stuff.
Yeah, I don't need to put in leave for that week.
Safe to say, that one we can lock away.
I wouldn't sit by the phone for that.
No, exactly right.
Flipping it to the other side. So if you are the interviewer, because there will obviously be people that listen to this as well that potentially don't sit on interview panels all the time and are now tasked with getting the right person for the job. Catherine, what are the big things straight off? Like, are you worried about who's asking the questions, who's designing the questions? Like, are they the sort of things that they would have to discuss before they go into that role?
100%.
Yep.
And the same message applies to the panel as it does to the applicant. Preparation's everything.
Yep.
When you're going into this process, you have to acknowledge that the people that are coming to see you have put in time, have put in effort. They're making space in the day to come and talk to you about this opportunity. You should show the respect that that deserves. So I think going into these processes prepared is really important for panel members. Read the applications and have some questions that are tailored to that applicant. It is great if you can say, I noticed this in your cover letter. Talk to me a little bit more about that, because that's actually where you get more gold in the conversation. We will always have an interview guide where we assign questions to people depending on our skills and expertise. We will stray as we go through the conversation. We let the conversation evolve because we want it to feel authentic. It's a guide, not a script.
Yep.
It is important for equity and to remove any unconscious bias that you do ask the same questions of all of your applicants. How that conversation evolves along the way can adapt based on your conversation at the time. But making sure it's consistent all the way is really important. Making it feel authentic is really important as well, because that candidate's getting an experience of what does it actually look and feel like to be in that organisation. You are representing your organisation there. You want it to feel authentic. You want to give the process the due diligence it deserves.
Yep. How do you go about putting together an unbiased interview panel?
Yeah.
I suppose is part of it too, because we are in a space where everyone knows everyone, like coaching space in particular. But how do you go about, like, what should you be looking for, I suppose, on an interview panel if you're putting one together?
Yeah, definitely. I think the first thing is shooting for diversity, making sure there's diverse genders, diverse levels of experience, diverse roles within your organisation. if you're interviewing for basketball roles, maybe have a non-basketball person on your panel. That's the expertise that I bring to our panels often. Yep. I'm not a basketball person, but I understand the culture of this organization. That's a really important view to have on your panel.
Yeah, I think that's part of it too. Yeah. Like, you do want different perspectives. Mm. Like, something that you hear, Dom may not, and vice versa. Yep. It's like, well, why have I not heard it? Have I been looking at it with one lens of the basketball role, so to speak, and not the other side of it? Mm.
The other thing I would say is going into these processes, because basketball is such a closely connected community, is calling out where you've got an interest. Saying, I know this candidate, I've worked with this candidate before, or we're from the same association. Making that overt to the rest of your panel members so that can be factored into any decision making is really important.
Just a level of subject expertise, because our game is not the same all the time. If you're interviewing for a 3-on-3 job, have someone that's a subject and a subject expert in 3-on-3 be there. If you're interviewing for a wheelchair sport job, then make sure that you've got a person with either lived experience as an athlete or as a coach that can bring a lens or ask different questions to it. I think it's dangerous to assume that basketball is basketball, right? So like having that level of expertise based on what that is too.
How close is too close in terms of like familiarity with someone on a panel? Like, when do you need to say there is a conflict of interest here, this is too close for me to be on this? Like, is there a line or is it just sort of gut feel?
I think it's gut feel.
Yeah.
And I think if you're calling it out to the rest of your panel members, then you can all make a decision together, rather than relying on the person with the interest to make that judgment call as to whether to call it out in the first place or not.
Yep.
So I think having an open conversation with your panel members to say, actually, I think if I ask this question, it might give a leading answer. So I'm not going to take that one. I'd rather take this question. That's a good way to handle it.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it before where it feels like the interview panel goes in with the intention to cause stress and cause as much stress as possible to just see what the person or the applicant is like in that space. Is that the right approach to take?
No, absolutely not. Yeah.
Well, I knew the answer, but I had to ask the question. Like, it's
that signals the kind of organisation that you're going into, right? I think the interviews, it is a difficult process. And you are there to prove that you have the requisite skills and experience for that opportunity. Every organisation wants the best person for the role. But that doesn't mean you have to turn up the heat so much and cause that much stress to someone, because you're not getting the best of your candidate. You're actually getting the absolute worst of your candidate. A good panel will know that. If culturally that's how people treat each other in that organisation, then as a candidate, that would be a red flag for me.
I would put an asterisk on, like, where does the difficulty come from the person? So there's a lengthy process with multiple steps may cause anxiety because it is multiple steps. But that doesn't mean that it's a bad process to have gone through, you know, because the organisation, the signal that I would say that's coming from that is the organisation is taking their time to be thorough because they want to make sure that they're seriously invested in the right person. Is it stressful because the candidate is unprepared for the depth of answering or the depth of question that's asked of them? If that's the case, that doesn't speak to the organisation, that speaks to the candidate. So, I think there's a perception of leaving is really important to have a awareness of like where that stressor may come from as well.
And I think if most organisations will go into the process knowing what the steps are.
Yes.
There's a phone screen, then there's the first interview, then there's the second interview, then we may do a practical. Telling your candidates that up front is really important as well. We are taking our time with this process because this is a really important appointment for us. Prepare your candidates, remove some of that stress where you can.
Yep. How would you go about, Dom, I'm curious, we'll put the state lens on in this sort of situation where there's usually three-ish people on a panel.
Yep.
How do you deal with the split decision on who it goes with? Because there's a very real possibility that in various cases, two people want someone, one another will want someone else. How do you deal with that?
I think the best process to go through is to understand why the dissenting opinion is occurring. So like, I don't know if I've been on that many panels that have fully unanimous decisions, to be perfectly honest. I think it's always good because the range of experiences should speak to dissenting opinions, basically, I think, in some way. But the working through like what is the key point of difference, and then with the panel doesn't necessarily always mean that they are the decision-making team. They are like one step on the journey of whatever that decision-making process looks like. So then going back to the decision-making team and having a conversation about what the panel's reflections were, where the points of dissension were, and then at some point the buck stops, right? So it could be one person, it could be a majority vote, it could be whatever the system is structured to be, and there may be trade-offs that need to be made in that kind of component. The idea, when I talk about trade-offs, the idea of this person interviewed really well for a U16 position. We don't have a candidate for a U18 position that we're of the same level. We've got two candidates here. Is there an opportunity for one of them potentially to move into a different role? And consider that. And then working with the selection panel around what that might be. So I think there's a bit of a difference for interviewees or applicants to understand that it's not always... The interview panel isn't always the decision-making panel around appointment, but in that process we would go, and certainly with the state team lens on, that is true, that often we have guest panel members who bring a layer of expertise. So in the past we've had Dee Butler from Diamond Valley, we've had Sam Wisdom from Dandenong Sport Radar, Jacob Chance before he went to the US, Luke Brennan from Southeast Melbourne, they've all been on panels, Kennedy Kariyama of the Spirit. And so they're an external lens bringing expertise to a conversation, but they're not necessarily a part of the decision-making panel in terms of who gets appointed. So, I think it's an understanding and nuance about what that looks like, but it's certainly a collaborative process. I know I've spoken for a long time on this answer, but just my last point on that. Like for us, any estate appointment is collaborative in nature. It is a conversation with cultural fit about our presentation with our PNC team. It is a discussion with our coach education team about where they've been and the interaction they've had. It is the high performance coach having a lens on who the right fit at the right point in time is. So it's all of that feeds into what our eventual appointments look like.
Yep. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. I think it is... It's common and understood that there will be some robust conversations following the process to really critically analyse everything that you just heard and the compare and contrast of your candidates. Knowing what's your essential versus desirable criteria is really important from the outset. That helps with the decision making. Having a marking rubric almost of how the candidates have responded to each component of the interview is important to help you get there to a response at the end. But also recognising that not all of those requirements are made equal, and actually recognising one unique skill or experience that a candidate brings to a role might outweigh some of those other things. And actually there's a gap in our team that we never realised we had until we had this conversation. Let's weight that quite heavily here. So there's a number of factors you're considering to get to that decision, but having that goes to the diversity of the panel, and having people who are willing to have a view and have a voice means that we are less likely to hire more people like us, bring more diversity into our organisation.
Yeah, there was a really fascinating case study. I'm going back now and I'm going to butcher how I've remembered this, but it was along the lines of, I think they were interviewing for like a symphony and it was behind a screen so you couldn't see who was walking on stage. And they went a step further. It's like everyone must wear flats so you can't hear if someone's coming in heels. Then it went a step further again. It's like, please no aftershave, perfume or anything like that. So you couldn't distinguish anything. So it was literally on merits of how does it sound. And that was the easiest way they could get – easiest way. There's some steps in that obviously. But, you know, that was the easiest way for them to say we're removing all level of bias. So you don't know who it is that's playing the violin behind that screen, but, you know, which one was better out of the three. The third one, great. And away you go. But – you don't have to go quite to that level, obviously, but, you know, that awareness around the bias, I think, is a really important one. But how would you go if you've gone through interviews and you're not happy with the candidates? Like, do you still appoint, or do you say, hey, this is not an ideal situation for us? We're going to look at this again and maybe open it up again.
It depends is the answer. We would look at it and see, are there components of this role that our preferred candidate here could do whilst the other parts could be either reapportioned or really adapting the position based on the best candidate that we have available? That's one approach. If the answer to that is no, or the impact on other roles or the organisation is too vast, then we go back to market. It's okay. I think it's okay to go slow with these processes and make sure you get it right from the outset, rather than finding much further down the track that it's a more difficult conversation to have when you've not nailed it. So I will encourage our panel members, if you are not certain, take some time to think about it. If you are not certain, invite your preferred candidate along for a coffee to ask some more questions. Or if you're really not certain, it's okay to wait and it's okay to say, not yet, let's go again.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That'd be the same from the coaching side?
Yeah, I think so. The stresses of that the role not being filled will always be less than the stresses of the wrong person being filled in the role. So, yeah, that speaks to Catherine's point about go slow with that process for sure. You will always be able to find a workable, manageable notion to fill a gap for a period of time until you can find the right person. That will be stressful, but it'll be way less stressful than having the wrong person in.
Mm. Yeah, cool. So we're going to assume that a candidate has been unsuccessful because, you know, glass half empty approach to most things. How do they go about dealing with that? Like, and avoiding the whole, you've missed out and you're now on the never list rather than you've missed out and you're just on the not for now list. Like, how can the candidate sort of go about that, I guess, Don?
The seeking of feedback is a good thing to go down. So I appreciate the fact that that's the decision the panel has made. I'm disappointed, expressing your disappointment with that. You know, that's fine too. I think that's and fair and human. But then seeking some feedback on it, but being targeted with how you seek that feedback. Don't just ask for feedback in general. It's like, okay, if this is what I've been given as why I was unsuccessful, then can I ask about this, this, and this? Or these are the three things. Or can you give me two things that I can walk away from and focus on for next time? I think is by like the best way to kind of go through it. Give yourself some time to be able to do that. Give some space from the decision because we'll all have that immediate reaction. For some, it'll be more visceral than others. You know, it'll be an immediate like frustration or it'll be immediate sadness or it'll be immediate disappointment, whatever it is. So give you a chance to be able to process what that looks like. I would imagine that it would be fair to say, I hope this is fair to say, that people who miss out on roles probably should have a sense of disappointment because that's connected to the desire that you had to be in the role, right? And so then allow yourself to process that, seek that feedback in a way that is that you find most comfortable to be able to do. So it might be pick up the phone and have a personal call. It might be do it via email because you feel like you want that separation too. And then, see what the feedback is that comes back. And then the next step would be to seek out the person I think that you trust to be able to help action that feedback. Doesn't necessarily have to be in the same organisation. So you apply for a state job, you're unsuccessful in a state job, doesn't necessarily mean that it's call me or have that conversation with a BV employee. It might be go to your mentor and say, here's the feedback that I got. What's my action plan for how I can go about addressing that in the next 12 months so that I can come back in August 2027 and interview for 2028 and be a better candidate, a better choice to be able to look for. Mm. Yeah, I think they're the steps that I would go about.
Yep. Yep. And the strength in being able to come back for the next campaign and say, I heard that feedback and I worked and this is where I am now, I think is really, really great for a candidate to be able to do. I'll counter your point now with giving feedback to say that also for candidates recognise the effort and the time that your panel are putting in, and it's not possible for them to give feedback to everyone. I think it's absolutely appropriate that if you interview for a role, then you're due some feedback. We want to pay reverence to your time. If you don't get shortlisted for an interview, there's often a vast number of applicants and it's impossible for the panel to give feedback to every single person who applied. So think about how far you've gone in the process and what level of feedback you should expect based on that.
Yeah. Hopefully the organisation has flagged that, right? Mm. So, you know, hopefully it's like not often I feel like you submit an application, you get the email back that says, thanks for your application. Not all candidates will receive feedback. Yes. You know, you have that flag. Certainly, I think absolutely, true. If you get interviewed, that's definitely a great line.
Yep. And just leaving it in a positive place. Mm. Yeah. I think too, it's, and look, we've all had it over the years where unsuccessful candidate, you give them the feedback, they're nice as pie about it and they get great, and then you hear sort of through other channels it's like, oh, they're not nice as pie about this, they're pretty salty on this, and it's like, cool, like that's just remembered, like it's not a
you don't necessarily need to follow up with it, but it's just, okay, noted. Yeah. And that's okay.
And feedback can be too. You can take the feedback and not agree with it.
Yeah,
like, that's okay too, right? Like, take the feedback and be like, actually, no, I don't think I agree with where that is. But if that's the feedback as to why you were unsuccessful, then that's the feedback that the panel has for you. So, like, take it or leave it, right? You know, kind of idea. So if you decide to action it, awesome, because you feel like there's some merit in it. If you decide not to action it because you don't agree with it, then that's fine too.
Yeah.
But I would anticipate if you're going back to the same job in 12 months' time to apply for it again, then you're likely to have the same feedback if you haven't progressed or addressed it in some way.
Yeah, and I think to your point around not burning any bridges, because panels and organisations remember the people that they interviewed that they had a really positive experience with. Well, she may have been unsuccessful for that opportunity. When the next opportunity comes up, they'll go, I remember Rob. He might be a great fit for this role. He wasn't a great fit for that one, but let's talk. Can we ring him? Let's talk to him.
Absolutely. No, I really like that idea. Like, always keep it civil on the other end of it, because again, you might be applying in 12 months' time, in which case you want to speak to the growth that's happened in that 12 months, or you just might need them as a resource somewhere else down the road. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to be that first point of call. I mean, and one thing I really should flag, if you are appointing any coaches for coaching children in junior positions, please interview the coach. Like, it is a requirement to interview every coach that goes through that, and obviously with the child safety lens with that. If you are looking for resources on that, Sport Integrity Australia has a resources guide that you can go through as well, which has a list of questions you can ask. There are some potential red flags that might jump out at you as well. But please, if you are interviewing for any junior positions, and you should be, just to be clear on that, it doesn't need to be a 45-minute Q&A. It might just be a little 10-minute chat over the phone or anything like that. Please interview, and please use the child safety resources along those lines too, because it is a vital part of everything we do in that coaching space.
And asking those child safety questions shouldn't feel awkward. It's a normal part of the conversation that we have when we work in a child-connected environment. So any candidate that you're talking to as an interviewer should expect that.
Absolutely. It's the bare minimum, to be perfectly honest. Yeah. So any last advice, I suppose, for coaches or anyone before they jump into an interview space, Catherine? So we'll start with you first. Is there anything that you would say, look, here's what I would recommend before you walk into your interview?
Yeah, my hot tips are, having done all of your preparation, having read all of the documentation you've been provided, thought about your answers, said them out loud, the most critical point for me is the 10 minutes before you walk into the room. And that goes to my point before about not being late. Don't rush to get there. If you've got time to get there and have a coffee before you walk into the room, absolutely do that if it settles your nerves. My favorite hot tip for myself when I'm walking into a conversation is listen to your favorite song or your pump up music along the way. It's amazing. Love it. What
which
that
is, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, it's Beyonce.
Nice.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. Same.
Yeah.
Is it all the single ladies, Dom?
It's definitely the rodeo song. Cowboy.
Yeah. So that, again, mindset's everything when you walk in there. You want to feel good. You want to feel prepared. You want to feel confident. So if that's what helps you get there, do that. And I think, have you ever done the Wonder Woman pose? Are you familiar?
Oh, yes. I've done this in my school life.
Yes.
Oh,
hang on. I didn't, but I reckon I saw it on Ted Lasso. Are we thinking the same thing? Okay, gotcha.
Amy Cuddy, you stand for 2 minutes or so in the pose of Wonder Woman, legs apart, hands on your hips, take a big deep breath. It's really good for settling nerves.
Yep.
There's something physical that happens in your body. So doing some of those things to get you in the right frame of mind before you walk into the room, your interviewers will know. Talk a lot before you walk in as well, because if you've got any nervous crackles in your voice, you'll get them out the way.
Yep, I really like that one.
Yeah.
Like, it's the amount of times I've interviewed for something and I've been talking to someone for like 45 minutes beforehand. Mainly because I can swear as much as I want in those ones and it doesn't come out of the interview. Like, I'm a little bit cleaner when I come into the interview for the first time. But it gets the nerves out. Yeah. Like, it's all that nervous energy is just out of the system straight away.
Yeah.
So I really like that one. Yeah. Dom, what about for you?
Yeah, speaks to a red flag, actually, swearing in an interview.
Yeah, not
like
great.
Using curse words. Like, even if in colloquial setting, like, just not, that's a no-fly zone.
Yep.
I guess with the application process, probably going before interview element is like one of my mentors said to me once that if you ever apply for a job that you know you're ready for, it's the wrong job for you. And so unless, you know, maybe you're on a different part of your journey, but apply for the position that you're not ready for. Like, yeah, just put yourself out there, have a crack at what that looks like. We know in particular that certain cohorts won't do that or are less willing to do that than others. And so really important that if you feel like, you know what, I've done my time, I feel like I'm ready to be or I've served as an assistant coach, but I think I'm really only an assistant coach. It's like, just apply for the head coaching job, right? Like, yep, go through the process. Mm. You'll get some feedback that will demonstrate whether or not you are ready for it, or the organisation believes you're ready for it or not. But yeah, just put yourself out there. I think before any interview process, I would encourage everybody who feels like they may be ready, that is grounded in examples, is grounded in real life experiences, has data to be able to support it, but thinking about it, to put yourself out there to be able to do that, particularly for Basketball Victoria roles. We can speak to that organisation. We know what that organisation looks like. We want aspirational people applying for jobs that aren't necessarily quite there yet. So that's a sort of, I guess, a number one.
But please get your accreditation sorted before you get to that point.
1,000%. Like, absolutely.
I don't need more work. I do have a Nick and a Ciro now, but we don't need more work chasing up accreditation. So please make sure your accreditation is sorted before you are applying for that role.
The requirements of the role. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm a big fan of doing some kind of like relaxation moment for yourself, or like centering moment for yourself, whatever that might be. It might be your Superwoman pose, Wonder Beyonce. Woman pose, could be Beyonce, could be a little dance off in the car, whatever it is. Or it could be a breathing technique or whatever it is that you like to use. Just something to make sure that you feel kind of like present before you go in there. I am a big note preparer that doesn't necessarily like demonstrate that I have those notes to anybody else, but will often take a notebook with me to then be able to like have my notes, write my stuff down. Yep, Catherine's got hers in front of her. Could be your phone, whatever works, to review, just go through what you think is coming up so that you feel confident when that moment comes. But present your best self. Just give yourself the best chance to present your best self, whatever that looks like. If that means you get there 45 minutes early, get there 45 minutes early. If that means so that you're not worried about that stress. If that means that you consciously go over the top with your introduction because you know you can scale it back from that point in time and settle in and get that out. Find a way to give yourself the best chance to present your best self and call it out if that's not it. Like, stuff happens, life happens. So you're going into an interview process, you've just been on the phone with the boss and like something's gone wrong, and that you know that when you leave the interview process, you're going to have to go in action, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we get it. Just call that out in the 5-minute walk or 3-minute walk to the interview room for wherever the waiting spot is. It's like, you know, hey, yeah, I'm actually feeling a little bit because I just had a call with the boss and I've got some tasks to go out. So I'm just going to, can I have a minute to just park that, make sure I'm presenting my best self to you. Like, there's no panel in the world that'll be uncomfortable with that. So, yeah, I think that's go through what that process looks like. But, I encourage everybody to apply. If you're thinking about it, if you feel like, yeah, actually I can tick a few boxes on the sheet, like, just put yourself out there to be able to have a crack at it.
Yeah, absolutely. What the selection criteria, the information that's out there is only part of the story of what that organization's looking for, right?
Yep.
And only by applying do you find out if you actually fit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really like it. Thank you both for jumping in on that one. It's fantastic. Hopefully there's a lot of advice in there that coaches and people in the application world can take away, I think, in this, because there's tons of stuff in there that I think people can work towards that maybe they haven't considered until hearing it sort of thrown out there in that sort of space. So fantastic. End of the social split talk for this week.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
This one is Seth Rogen. I had to take out a whole lot of the weird Seth Rogen laughs. I was very specific about Seth Rogen, not Joe Rogan, in this space as well. Talking about quitting in general.
Only way to mitigate not being successful is to not quit. That's it. If you don't quit, you might make it. And if you quit, you definitely won't. I had never heard the words Ian McKellen until he was Magneto in X-Men. Then all of a sudden, he's like in Lord of the Rings. He's one of the most famous people on Earth. He got famous when he's like 60. Like that's what happens to people sometimes. You know what I mean? It's like you never know. You know, and so I think that is what's interesting is, and if you like it, then just don't quit.
Real interesting lens to take on this, because obviously anytime someone applies for a job, there are probably 4 other people that have applied that have been unsuccessful. Mm. The ratio is very much in more the unsuccessful category. If it is something you care about and you're passionate about, keep going towards it. Mm. That's the biggest thing. That's the biggest advice. Speaking to exactly what you're talking about, Don, apply.
Yep.
Like, have a crack at it. If this is like, if being a state coach has been something you've cared about, keep applying and keep seeking the feedback and keep actioning the feedback and just keep going. Because at some point, it'll click.
Yep.
And sometimes you're not the right candidate for the right team on the right year or whatever it might be. That's okay. You might be the next time. Mm. And yeah, it's not a toys out of the cot moment. I think it's a just keep going at it.
The like Nando's line in that he recites a lot is like, comparison is the thief of joy. I don't know who I should actually attribute that quote to, but
yeah, I'm probably gonna, more philosophical than Nando, to
I'm
be fair.
Give it to Nando. Yeah. But that notion like rings true for me out of that quote. Like that notion too of like, well, I should be further along, or I should be here, or I should be there. It's like, nah, don't stress about any of that, right? Like, Scott Roth wasn't a head coach until way later on in his career than Jacob Chance was. Now they're coaching in the same league against each other, right? Like, it's not a don't be in a rush, that, you know, to be able to work it, do the work, be confident in the work, put yourself out there to apply, but also don't look at others and compare and then be able to say, oh, well, like, I don't have that, or I'm not able to get that, or I need to be this old, or I need to have this much experience. It's like, no, don't worry about comparing anybody else. Consider you against what the criteria looks like and then, yeah, dive straight in. Love it. Yeah.
Like it.
Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you both very much for jumping in on the pod. Survived the debut, Catherine.
Loved it.
Well done.
Happy to be back.
Happy to be. Oh, that's dangerous. As soon as people say they're available, now you're on the roster. That's real nice dangerous.
It's just nice to have some GMs on the podcast, I think. Really.
It is. We're not touching that one. That's okay. There's a story behind that. No. There's a story time behind that that we'll say for after the podcast has finished recording. Coaches, thank you very much for listening once again, and we'll catch everyone again next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.